It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with the Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, DGS. Thanks to everyone who came out to Dave Glover Band gig at Del Mar. We're booking more shows for the summer and excited about it and working on new tunes like that one. Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
And that's you, right?
That's us practicing.
No, I mean, like, you're going to be Michael McDonald.
I would love to be, but I have Dave Farber in the band.
Oh.
Who has a
Doobie
Brothers band.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess that probably solves it.
Dave's pretty good.
I was going to say.
Dave's pretty good. Yeah. No, I sing this. I sing this on the way home almost every night. And I'm getting more and more Michael McDonald.
All right.
But I'm afraid it would be an impression. Which would be bad.
Such a unique voice.
Oh, yeah. Yes. You can only do so much Michael McDonald.
What if you guys did everything as him?
That'd be fun.
Like do Beatles as Michael McDonald.
That'd be fun. Who wants to tell me about the new screw worm?
The what?
The screw worm?
Yeah.
You know this one?
Yeah, I know a bit about the screw worm. It's the New World screw worm, of course, which is, you know, of all the kinds of screw worm, that's the one
you want.
It's the one you want the least. So this is... this is a really bad beef parasite that can pop up in cows, and it can cause huge problems with, you know, because you can't – it decimates cattle populations, essentially. And we had eradicated it since 1966, but Elon cut all the screwworm monitoring programs that we had.
What?
So now some larva has been found in a calf for the first time since 1966.
So we get to go after Elon for this then, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think the president's spokesperson for this says that
he's a spokesperson for the screw worm.
I don't recall her name, but it's the his like FDA or whatever. She says there's nothing to worry about right now in terms of like, you know, this is not a huge threat to cattle health or public health. But some people are understandably concerned because this is a pretty nasty parasite.
Yeah, I think we're going to continue to see more things like that. I didn't even know that existed, much less that it was cut.
Well, it's been gone. I mean, pretty much the entirety of your life.
Yeah, it says it's been basically gone for 60 years. Gee, it's almost like the protections we had in place were working. Almost.
Do you see that Bezos is spending $500 million funding research to find the ultimate algorithm of the human brain so that it can be synthesized with AI to finally push AI over the edge?
Nonsense words.
Yeah.
Straight up gobbledygook.
Yeah, I'm really not trying to be a smart aleck, but when we talk about pushing AI over the edge... And that is to accomplish what? Like, what is the ultimate goal with that?
I would love to ask that question of them.
Well, I'm sure their answer in some way is make money.
Yeah, if Bezos is doing it, it's because they,
right,
because we can then sell that to the government, or we can sell that to governments all over the world.
But what is that going to be used for?
Great question. I don't think they care. If it makes billions, that's what's going to matter.
I think that's the ultimate question, though. And it's the simplest question. Like, hey, where are we going? Like, tell me the best case scenario of this. Because I can imagine some bad ones.
Yeah.
But you, Altman, Bezos, you know, Musk, tell me your best case.
Is it? So maybe this is crazy and maybe it doesn't work this way. But it would seem to make a lot more sense if we were just using the concept of AI to create a bunch of very industry-specific experts. We're going to make AI deal medical problems. And it's all it does. It doesn't have any other stuff. It doesn't have information about anything military. It doesn't have anything about human beings. It's just this. That would seem to be more productive than just, let's make these general intelligences that really we can't see the end of. Like, we don't know how that ends. We don't know if it's good, bad, indifferent. Could be the greatest thing ever. Could not be.
Our economy is so wrapped up in that at this point, though. Yeah. Like, if AI just went away tomorrow, we would be in a very bad place as far as, like, the markets and stuff. So I also feel like a lot of it is just we got to keep doubling and tripling down and, like, hoping this all works out. Because that's where, just so much money has been poured into this.
Yeah.
And so much of, like, the government's willingness to just go along with what these tech companies want to do is this fear that China is going to overtake us. So we're throwing a lot of caution to the wind to just, in the spirit of being first.
Yeah, I'm thinking that this is even beyond the Manhattan Project, that there has to be someone thinking about the fact that if the true singularity is possible, whoever gets there first, in a best case scenario kind of way, will literally rule the world. You know.
Oh, there's no question this is an arm. It's the modern arms race. You don't want your competitors to get it before you do.
But my spidey sense tells me that whoever gets it, it's not going to make that big of a difference. There are worse actors out there than us, certainly. But I don't feel great if we're the ones who do that. Because, like, Rach, I'm even more clueless about it than you guys. Like, I can't even imagine. I can't even feature it. Like, when you talk about universal basic income, does not compute. Where's the money come from? I don't understand any of it. This is interesting. The Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. has, I don't think they were defrocked, but they were pulled out of their job as exorcists because they have been putting out social media content saying basically that UFOs are real, but they're demons, which, of course, I think Pete Hegseth has said and other people in administration, but now Catholic priests who are exorcists are saying it, and the cardinal there in D.C. is like, nope, we're not going there. You're out of a job.
Yeah, you may want to clear those things with your bosses before going out there with it, right?
Seems to be a lot more leeway in the Catholic Church than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like once you cause trouble, then you're in trouble. That's a lot of things, though.
I didn't know they had so many exorcists.
Yeah, man, they do. They were recruiting new ones.
Yes. Recruiting?
Yeah. I'm not making it up.
Like,
yeah.
if I'm good at being an exorcist?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, there's a whole, like, little Navy SEAL brigade of Catholic exorcists that go out and exorcise people. It's National Cheese Day. 52% of Americans self-identify as cheese-obsessed.
I mean...
Obsessed?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah,
I like it a lot.
It's a nice compliment to a lot of things.
But I can live without it on a lot of things. A pizza, but...
Just don't cut it too many times.
You want to do a quick impromptu Elite Eight of cheesy dishes?
Sure.
All right. Andrew, lead it off.
Oh. macaroni and cheese.
There you go.
Wheels. Sorry, I thought you had those dishes already.
Pizza. Pizza.
What about...
Yeah, it's hard.
Cheese tray.
Yeah, cheese tray. Charcuterie. Charcuterie situation.
There's the winner. Let's go.
Chunk of cheese.
Loaded nachos.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Andrew.
Grilled cheese.
Nice.
Cheeseburger.
Ooh. Yeah. Cheese puffs.
Oh, cheesy puffs.
Well played.
You get the last one, Dave.
It is tougher than you think. There's a gazillion of things covered in
cheese. Go for a fondue.
I do like a fondue.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of gross when you're doing it, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Mac and cheese versus pizza.
Mac and cheese.
Pizza.
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 Charcuterie versus nachos.
Nachos. You're in the wrong room, Rachel.
I like that she went down with the ship, though.
Nachuterie.
I like a nice charcoot.
Grilled cheese versus cheeseburger.
Burger.
Cheeseburger.
Berg.
Boiga.
Boiga. Cheese puffs versus fondue.
Cheesy puffs.
Yeah, puff.
I don't know what a fondue is, but I'm not fond of cheesy puffs, so I'm going to say fondue.
Puffs moves on. Pizza versus nachos.
Pizza.
Boiga versus puffs.
Burger.
Burger.
Boiga versus pizza.
Pizza.
Burger.
I don't even know what the...
We don't have
right now,
a
if you go burger,
breaker.
Burger wins.
Okay.
If you go pizza, it's a tie.
Then we would have to find someone.
Or we could just leave it a tie. How about this? Cheeseburger on a pizza.
Never had it.
You never had a cheese? Have you ever had a cheeseburger pizza?
No. That's what I'm saying.
Man, there's a good cheeseburger pizza out there. You can get it at the store.
Are you talking about the one that has, like, hamburger meat on it? Or are you talking about the one that has, like, relish and mustard and ketchup and stuff?
It's got the one that I like is the Four Hands one that is the drive-in.
High Point.
High Point drive-in cheeseburger pizza.
And what's
on
it?
It's got burger, french fries, ketchup, onions, I think pickles. Yeah, it's pretty good, man. It's pretty good.
Oh, you're out with pickles, aren't you?
I'm out with ketchup.
Actually, you know what? There are no pickles. It's not ketchup. It's got a burger sauce as the sauce instead of pizza sauce.
I hate to do this to Andrew, because he's gone tomorrow, but Rach, you know, I've been craving this. We may need to find a fourth and go get the giant burger at Maggio's.
Yum.
Big burg.
That thing is...
It's a good burg.
A monster, and it's so good.
It's not just giant. It's really good.
It's like...
Do you think they hate it
like
when we order it?
Three more people.
You could do... Yeah, you could do just the three of you and just have some, and just make it two meals.
Bring it back.
Yeah, lunch and dinner.
Dude, it's worth it.
A big tray of fries?
It's the most fries I've ever seen in my life.
It is the most fries I've ever seen, yeah.
It's like the whole ass oven tray just covered in fries.
Oh, it's so good.
Well, back to the cheesy Elite Eight.
Yeah.
I think what we've proved is cheese is an amazing compliment, but the actual cheese-centric dishes, they didn't do so hot.
Very true.
Like, I literally said a plate of cheese,
yeah.
And you guys turned your noses up at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like a plate of cheese, but not up against nachos. Nachos are like a staple food.
No, that's...
What is the best food that stands
not
alone?
Not true.
Well, as the saying goes, the cheese.
It's at the Kentucky Derby. I'm sorry.
What?
Behind you.
They're doing something like some Olympics, I guess.
There's an announcement on the WashU campus. It's where they have the Olympic rings. It's the St. Louis Sports Commission, and Jackie Joyner-Kersee's there. I don't know exactly what they just announced, but the mayor has a flowery hat on, and it was... I was like, that's the Kentucky Derby.
Silly-ass hat she's got.
She looks like if Zorro were super gay.
It's like a mobster hat.
Yeah, she looks like a pirate.
I didn't say anything mean about you, Miss Mayor.
No, it just surprised me. I looked up, I'm like, oh, is this Kentucky Derby?
No, don't get me wrong. I love pirates.
I couldn't feel more like I'm dreaming right now.
I'm so sorry. That was just so distracting. And I got Rachel's attention, and then she looked, and we're both over here laughing. It's just not what
I was expecting to see.
Yeah, you don't.
That's exactly. I saw JJK up there a minute ago looking like JJK
also,
always looks.
It's like 2 p.m. This isn't the news or anything, right? So they broke in with this?
I guess.
What's going on?
It's a big deal for St. Louis, whatever it is.
I didn't see what it was, but my understanding is it's a pretty significant thing. It's Olympic related. I think some kind of Olympic trials. I'll look and see. I'll find it. It's a pretty significant thing.
The hat wearing Olympics finally coming to St. Louis.
Why is she wearing the hat?
She just brandished the hat. She did.
Tipped it.
It's not a bad hat. It just surprised me.
No, it's not. It's not. She looks pretty good.
It's not a bad hat.
I mean, I wouldn't wear it.
I wish you would.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome back, DGS 223. Gene says that the Marathon Olympic Trials are coming here in 2028.
Very cool.
Very cool. All I know about St. Louis marathons is from Amy, and it's a hilly, difficult course.
Sounds like a trial.
Almost like a test.
Like you don't belong there if you can't do this.
I mean, it's almost like that's what the trial is.
And evidently, you have to wear a silly hat.
Really?
That's how we do it in the STL.
Yeah, they all have to wear the hat. If the hat comes back dirty, we'll know it was on the ground and you're out.
I'm trying to... Okay, the course will take athletes through some of the city's most iconic locations, including Washington University. Site of the 1904 Olympic Stadium.
Super cool.
I'm reading here they have to run up and then back down the arch.
That is rough.
That's going to be hard.
I guess you could just kind of slide down, though.
You could slide down, yeah.
Hey, we haven't had a woke story in a while. Want to hear one?
Sure.
Yeah.
The New York State Legislature has passed a bill. It's now on Governor Hochul's desk to sign or veto that changes all public legal... discussion from father and mother to gestating person and non-gestating person so that people are not excluded.
Okay. I mean...
Yeah, me too.
I think it's a little bit overkill, perhaps, but like it also doesn't affect my life.
Right. Same.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well said.
It's like,
yeah.
I don't care. Yeah. Sorry.
In my head, it's like, all care. Right, it seems a bit much, but like, it's not going to impact me one way or the other.
Yeah. Maybe this is what's wrong with me for like our MAGA friends out there, but that's not a hill I'm going to die on. Like, that's not even something I'm going to fight about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. All right.
And none of us have to call it the same thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's not like they're going to imprison you if you say mom or dad.
Right.
You know.
I mean, I get why it's jarring. I get why people are like, well, that seems like that's fine. Everybody can have that reaction. But in the end, does it really impact you? The answer to me is no.
You know what is pissing me off, though? Presidential libraries.
Oh. Why? Are you talking about the Obama one?
All of them. I'm in my older age, I'm becoming more and more anti-celebrity, anti-ruler, and we've always had them, right? I think they're way more ostentatious than they used to be. I think Obama's looks re-effin-diculous. You know Trump's going to blow some stupid crap out of the water. I just think that maybe people want to be ruled. You know, like this whole thing that we did 250 years ago was anti that. But boy, we sure act like people who want a king. And so, yeah, I don't like them. And I certainly don't like that they're $1 billion apiece.
I'm with you, shockingly.
It's privatized funding, but then we, the taxpayer, pay for the upkeep the rest of eternity. I just don't like it. I don't like building giant anythings to any individual person like that.
So, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck. Should we tear down the Washington Monument?
No. I was just about to say there are exceptions for especially great presidents after they're dead. My two cents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there should ever be a monument to a living president. I don't think there should ever be any gold statue of any president ever. And I just don't like that the presidential library, which I, as a kid, had always pictured just like a normal looking house that was kind of fancy. And you went in and that's where Truman, you know, wrote a letter to blah, blah. But the stuff that we're building now, it looks like dystopian places where you hide seeds.
We'll be right back.
Yes, on KMOX. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you? What's going on?
Not too much, buddy. Going to be playing some golf with our mutual friend Ed, who introduced me to next week, but I believe you'll be in New York.
I will. He actually asked me about that, probably trying to get the gang back together again. But yeah, and I'll be in New York and then on to Minnesota after that. And looking forward to the road trip. I always like going back to New York, my home state, but because I might get a chance to see some folks there.
Where did you grow up in New York, Rick?
I grew up about 70 miles north of New York City, but we were scared to death of the city. My parents made me that way. It's like, well, that's where stuff happens. So I went to a Met Cardinal game when I was 10 years old, and I'm looking over my shoulder the whole time thinking, like, I because my parents instilled this fear because they heard all this stuff because we were in a very small kind of rural town right up the Hudson River. And oddly, my mom got her purse stolen in the ladies' room. So, kind of made it like, okay, self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess.
So did you fall in love with the city once you grew up and got there?
I liked it better as a player than I did when I was younger. I think I had to get through that. And then visiting there as a player, I first started loving it because Shea Stadium was where I watched it. Again, we would only go to Cardinal games. So I would watch, I remember Brock and Gibson and Mike Shannon. I mean, I remember that. Julian Javier, that's the teams I kind of remember in the early 60s because a lot of my relatives were Cardinal fans. So I kind of remember falling in love with that stadium. So when I went there as a player, I say adult, I'm not sure how adult I was in my early 20s, but it's like, okay, this is the big leagues and this is a cool place to be. And then I kind of like the vibe. I love Central Park. I love, you know, Times Square. I mean, it's a high vibe place, obviously. And I mean, it's the classic thing though. I'm not sure I'd want to live there.
Rick, earlier this week we had Lawrence Maroney, the former Patriot football player in, and he was telling Wheels in a Break that baseball was actually his sport. He was better at baseball than football. Did you have a sport like that? Was baseball always your number one? I know you played basketball as well.
I was better at doing math. Is that a sport?
Wow,
I mean, I don't think it really is. Yeah. So I was actually on the math team in high school. So I joked about that with John Rooney, but I literally was on the math team. So the answer is that no, not really. I played basketball. I was pretty good in basketball. I don't think I could have played in a junior college or something, but I wasn't, you know, I could shoot and that's about it. But I loved basketball. My mom was a basketball player and played in women's leagues when I was young. So basketball was actually my first love. Huh. And I love the Knicks as a kid, which means I am digging right now because I'm a Knicks fan. So, and I haven't had much to root for about 40 years. But my mom instilled the love of basketball to me. And so I just wasn't as good at it.
So is that story about math is how John got the Archimedes nickname for you?
Yeah, 100%. No,
have you heard that?
I think Andrew learned this on Tuesday. Be careful who you tell what to, because you know. I mean, and so I brought that up one time about the math team, and then I went on to say the actual truth is I was on the team all year and never got a question right. So I was a bench warmer on the math team. So every once in a while we have to do something that humbles us. But you know, it was pretty cool to be with these very wise individuals and good friends of mine.
So, Rick, Kevin Wheeler said something very wise, as Kevin Wheeler always does about baseball.
Ooh.
But he brought up that not only has Jordan Walker done well and struggled, but he's done well and struggled and then done well again, which seems very important.
Okay, that is well. I'm going to go ahead and call him wise also. So that's two of us enabling him that way. So Kevin, you can be pretty happy with yourself right now. But no, that's a thing. I mean, it is the Jose Oquendo line about teaching kids to play infield. He said young players will say, I don't care if they miss the ball. I want to know what they do the next time it's hit to them.
Right.
That's what I care about. And that's the same thing with a guy. When a guy struggles, do you spiral? And then you lose them for 2 months or 2 years or the rest of their life. I mean, that I've seen that happen with players where they just get the negative vibe going and they can't recover from it. And some takes them a month, some of them takes a year, and some of them just don't get it. But to have Jordan come back so quickly after striking out whatever six times in a row and then becoming dangerous again right away, it's like, okay, that's a guy that's that's got some fortitude to him. He's got some recovery to him. He's got some resilience to him.
On that same note, not that it's not the same thing, because we haven't seen J.J. Weatherholt struggle the way that we saw Walker for the last 2 years really kind of battle being in the big leagues. But J.J.'s kind of done the same thing now, right? He was amazing in April, slipped a little bit for part of May, but now here we are. He's rolling again, and I don't know if you've seen a lot of the breakdowns, Ricky, but he's doing things as a rookie second baseman that nobody's done in 100 years, and that's crazy.
And defense is even part of that. Base running is extraordinarily good.
Yeah.
So, honestly, the difference between, and I love Jordan Walker, but the difference between the two of them, you could know J.J. Weatherholt for 5 minutes and believe that he's going to be that guy. I mean, that there's no worry that he's going to go into some dark place. I mean, I think Jordan's a little more of a thinker. Not that J.J.'s a thinker, too. But
no, I get what you mean.
I think J.J.'s, but they're just different in terms of how they compete. And I think, you know, Jordan might maybe overthink. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But J.J.'s got a really good balance of that, and I think it's pretty apparent.
Yeah, and obviously totally different, you know, career experiences. I mean, you know, J.J. Having been a college guy, built a lot of that confidence doing it in the college level, where Jordan was in the big leagues by the time that Weatherholt was probably a sophomore in college.
Yeah, so I always told guys when I was coaching with the Indians at the time, they were the Indians, I tell guys, look, you can give up three ropes in a row as a pitcher. This is the pitcher's equivalent to that. You got to get up on the mound and think, this guy's not going to hit me, because that's what I developed that from a lot of coaching and a lot of, you know, whatever beyond that. Maybe it was just me too, or just my own training, whatever it was. But I kind of had that sense of nobody can hit me. And they did, and trust me, you got to lie to yourself sometimes. You got to get back on the mound and go, "Yep, Mike Schmidt's not going to hit a home run here." And then, you know, 5 seconds later, you know, you watch him run around the bases. But then the next guy, nope, that guy's not going to hit me. It's really a mental exercise. It's almost a compartmentalization, and that guys do to maintain their confidence. And I think JJ has that, you know, in flying colors.
That's interesting, Ricky. I've always thought, and I've heard a lot of people describe it this way. I'm not sure that everybody agrees, but I think to be an elite athlete, you have to have something in your head where you kind of lie to yourself sometimes. I mean, I think you have to, because you know the guy you're going against is good, but your mentality has to be, I don't care, I'm going to be better today, even if you're not.
So I'll say this. You hear me say on the air all the time, I think pitchers should get timeouts. And why do hitters get time? Why are they tired from swinging twice and watching three pitches? A pitcher's throwing 40 pitches in an inning and doesn't get a timeout. And I mean, if it's a big inning, he should be able to have a timeout. So here's what I'd say about this. It reminds me, I never liked the pitching coach coming out to talk to me, because they're going to come out and remind me, okay, so here's what we got to do. You're reminding me of something I screwed up on. I'm already past that. I mean, honestly, I've already kind of said, look, I've kind of done my own little mental gymnastics to somehow convince myself that the world's not caving in around me. And now you're going to come out and remind me of that. And I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying it wasn't as productive to me as, because I probably wasn't listening much anyway, frankly.
You know, listen, you guys, it strikes me that in my own athletic career, I think I was always lying to myself one way or the other.
Yeah.
Telling myself this one's going between your legs, or
is confidence and lying, are they synonyms?
I don't know.
It feels like it. I mean, in a sports world, you've got to believe that it's going to happen until it doesn't. And then if it doesn't, you go back to believing again. And it's not like false, you know. I mean, there's no way, like me playing high school basketball, I mean, I can't go to the free throw line after not practicing and think I'm going to make a shot. I mean, there has to be something that you've done to prepare for that. But I mean, I can't be thinking, you know, I'm not really that good. Those guys are better. And you know, I'm not, you know, I just hope it goes in. I mean, hope is not a strategy.
No, and it's interesting too, Ricky. And I think that there's, you know, the big part of this is there are, you probably got the percentage better, but there's probably like 1 or 2% of pro athletes or athletes at any level that are always the best person on the field. But everybody else, you're facing better people sometimes. And if you don't believe you're good, why should anyone else believe you're good?
Yeah.
I had the great gift of competing in high school against the fourth pick in the country, a left-handed pitcher who threw upper 90s in high school. His catcher couldn't catch him. Half the time, the catcher would run back to the screen and pick up the ball, and I was up against him several times, and I beat him twice out of the three times that we faced each other. He had a walk-off hit the one time I lost to him in a 1-0 game.
Oof.
And so, I clearly wasn't him. He had ability way beyond mine, but it's like, well, wait a minute. If I do my thing, and I can still win this game. And I just think that was as a 17-year-old, that was a really good kind of place to be and a good lesson to learn.
Rick, I'm gonna end things here with a Dave question. We haven't had one in a while, but I'm curious. You know the saying, there's nothing new under the sun. When that comes to pitching and modern-day pitching, whether it's one of our guys or it's Skeens or Mizrowski, whoever it is, how often do you see a pitch where you go, that didn't even exist when I was pitching?
Well, that's a very Solomon-like question for you to say nothing under the sun, but I'm going to equate that to baseball here. Not very often. Red Shandings, well, I will say this. Red Shandings used to say, you always see something new. And it doesn't mean that it's, you know, like completely new, but you'll see something in baseball every year that you've never seen before. Red was very fond of saying that, and I think it was part of his passion and love for the game that he communicated to people. But, you know, there have been guys, I mean, Dwight Gooden was something I've never seen before.
Right.
And so I see Mizrowski. So, I mean, Dwight Gooden was head and shoulders better than anybody in my era for a short period of time. And so you get these wow things, and then, you know, but that's the fun of it, though. I mean, there's not anything, you know, if I see a guy hit a ball 600 feet, then I'll say, wow.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it, buddy.
Might happen. All right, guys. But now that I found you.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Well, I heard some people talking just the other day. Welcome back, DGS and KMOX 250. Janelle will be here at the top of the hour. We'll talk some movies and entertainment. Watch her and Wheeler nerd out.
They like to do that.
You guys are besties.
Yeah.
I brought you your new best friend.
Yeah.
Some fun facts. People tend to make more rational, less emotionally biased decisions when they reason through a problem in a foreign language rather than in their native one. Researchers call it the foreign language effect. Oh, that's a good one, boys.
Really creative name.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess that's great for the bilingual people out there, but
is
the rest
it,
of us.
You ever do that?
I've never tried it, but I can see why, because when you're thinking in the other language, you really have to dig in and think.
Yeah, you got to go a little slower, I would assume.
I mean, unless you're somebody that uses both regularly, right? I mean, I'm sure it's probably, I'd be curious to know if that's, you know, if let's say you're bilingual and you grew up speaking both Spanish and English, like from the time you're a little kid, well, to me, they're probably interchangeable to you. But if it's one that you have, but you don't always use it, I would see that would be a helpful exercise, because you definitely have to really focus.
Well, I mean, that's such a great point. I would also think that it's going to make you be more impartial in what you're saying and thinking too, because there are certain like emotions or like turns of phrase that we use in English that are not used in other languages. So you just have to become more objective about what you're saying. Because there's not like a direct translation in every language to maybe your emotional thoughts.
Wheels, does your French dissipate year after year?
Great question. Only the part where if you don't speak it a lot, you take longer to kind of get it going when you are using it. Like reading it, hearing it, that's not gone away at all. I can still do those things like easy. But when you're speaking, you notice the longer you've gone without speaking, the longer it takes for you to kind of get back to what you think is your normal.
If you were listening to two native French speakers, would speed be the problem?
Sometimes, and slang, because you don't always learn the slang. I learned a lot of it, but I haven't been over there in a long time, so I'm not sure if you pick up on that. But they also do, like, you know how we use contractions? They do the same thing. So if you're not really attuned, you'll miss some of those things.
Gotcha. In 1838, a 14-year-old boy nicknamed the Boy Jones broke into Buckingham Palace and stole Queen Victoria's underwear. That's the whole story. They don't say what happened to the boy Jones.
The boy Jones stole the undies.
Stole the undies.
He's like,
the
those
royal
are me,
undies.
Those are me undies.
In 2011, there was an unsuccessful attempt to make passing gas in public illegal in the African country Malawi.
It must have been a bad fart. They got people working on that legislation.
Is it that bad? Like somebody hurt themselves from being stunned? I mean,
I don't know. I've experienced a couple in my life where it's
illegal.
You are like a cruel person.
You should have left.
You shouldn't have done that.
Especially
that was
if you do it in an elevator. Not good.
The inventor of Tickle Me Elmo was one of the prime suspects in the Unabomber case. The FBI actually talked with him over a six-month period due to dozens of coincidences that linked him to the Unabomber.
Interesting.
He wasn't cleared until the day Ted Kaczynski was arrested.
When they talked to him, did he say, "Oh, no!
It's I wonder what those coincidences were."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, did it say anything about what those coincidences were?
They give me so little information.
Yeah.
Yeah, so little information. I kind of want to save that one for later. Ah, mixed emotions. Weezer has a new album dropping in August, the Gold Album. You can check out their new single called We Might As Well Be Strangers. I'm scared. I don't want to hate it. In fact, I would love to love it.
You could just choose to love it.
I don't know if I can.
What artist is this? I'm sorry.
Weezer.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be terrible. I mean, they have like 40 albums at this point, and they've got like 8 good ones, and it's like, that's enough. That's fine.
Tony Hinchcliffe, who got famous when he made the joke about Puerto Rico being an island of trash, and then made a very controversial George Floyd joke on the Kevin Hart roast, was given his own Netflix special.
Huh. You got that publicity he was looking for.
It's evidently that's the whole name of the game right there. Mm-hmm.
Just he's got that Joe Rogan money is the thing with him.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
He's Joe Rogan's little assistant.
But that's the double-edged sword.
Yeah. Yeah, he's he basically just follows
Joe
Rogan.
He's part of the Austin crew.
Yeah, he follows Joe Rogan around whenever Joe Rogan does comedy.
Didn't know
stuff.
That.
Yeah. I will see.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.